receiver set for UTSA. Carter, out of the shotgun, takes the snap, steps up, tracked down, now throws off his back. What it is, caught, now incomplete, broken up at the goal line. It is broken up at the goal line. Trayvon the block, saved the game, and maybe the season for FAU. And the Owls escape with a win.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Inside the Burrow, the FAU podcast for and by fans. My name is Dan. I am joined as usual by Shane and Jack. And tonight, we are going to break down this week's football game against University of Texas San Antonio. We're also going to talk a little bit bigger about Conference USA, some of the games that happened this past weekend, and also perhaps some of what's going on later on, and maybe talk, fire up the Lane Kiffin rumor mill. So I guess to get started, we'll kind of backtrack and talk a little bit about what happened last Friday night in West Virginia. All Owl fans were essentially Louisiana Tech fans, and started off great, really excited, 7-0 Tech, and then really the wheels just kind of fell off. And it was a disappointing loss, and there was some suspensions that were handed out essentially kind of the day of. I don't know, Shane, I think you were following those suspensions or the game a little bit more. What were your thoughts other than, man, what a terrible time for suspensions?
Yeah, I got frustrated about the Marshall game all over again because, we know the controversies on how Marshall beat us, and Lane even joked in his FIU press conference last week that, we're just going to go with the joke that we're 8-0 and we're undefeated in conference. I think that's still – those calls still really frustrate them behind closed doors. Marshall got the benefit of the doubt in that game. In a game we should have won. Not to rehash that, I think we were the better team outside of a handful of plays in that game. And, then Marshall gets the best team in the West on a Friday night, and their two best players, Smith and Hardy, both get suspended. So it's like, in a way, it feels like this is being handed to Marshall. We know they have the inconsistencies with Isaiah Green, and it's just a little frustrating. They get UNCC this week. I don't think UNCC has a chance, really, in this game. Let's say UNCC needed a comeback to beat UTEP. I guess the only hope is Benny LeMay's healthy. They're coming off a bye, and they have a chance to be bowl eligible at home for the first time in program history. So this is like
senior day,
Yeah, it's their Super Bowl. It's probably the biggest game in their short program's history. A chance, Marshall is a rival just based on distance. It's only a few hours away. So, they are going to be throwing everything into this game. I think Marshall, essentially, since they got a Wobey back at receiver, Charlotte's defense is not very good. And, I just don't want to get – how Owl fans, think about this, and I pointed this out in the other pod. We could be rooting – we play Southern Miss the last week at 3:30. FIU plays Marshall at noon. We could be rooting for FIU to become bowl eligible in order to get us – for us to be playing Southern Miss as a chance to win the East. I do not want to be in that situation.
I will go to the FIU game. And then
it's in Huntington, so
that's right.
It's God, and FIU's not playing well, so best shots this weekend. It's frustrating just because I think when you think about it now, those refs not knowing the rules cost a team a conference championship possibly. At the time it just seemed like a game in the middle of the season, and now it's has bigger stakes. We got to handle business this weekend with UTSA.
One other thing I saw, this was also the night that they, I don't know if it's like an annual thing, but where they honor the Marshall team that was lost in the plane crash. And I saw a stat that said Doc Holliday is like 10-0 on those nights where they do that. So it's just kind of like everything, it was Marshall's night, essentially. And so there were greater factors, greater forces affecting that game. I don't know, Jack. What was it? Looked like you were about to say something.
Yeah, I mean, it just helps when it seems like Marshall gets every single 50-50 ball go their way. I mean, that's something that we talked about when we played them a couple weeks ago. It seems like every 50-50 call when it comes to the referees goes their way. I'm not saying there's some sort of, you know, Conference USA conspiracy where they want Marshall back in the conference championship game. But, I mean, for Pete's sake, dude, can I just see one bad pass interference call go against them? Like, is that really that difficult? Because there was a lot on Louisiana Tech. There was a lot on us when we played them. God knows how many there's going to be against FIU when FIU blew. I mean, FIU probably will actually do some real pass interference because their defense is woeful. It just sucks, dude. And we're all Niners, man. We're all Niners this week.
That game is at 3:30 on Stadium Facebook. So yes. If you want to start your college football, you can watch whatever big game, get your laptop going and watch that game. And it probably will almost be over by the time FAU kicks at 6:00. So, back to back full afternoon, game, just one's just important as the other.
Nines.
Yeah. I mean, as for us handling UTSA this weekend, we're kind of talking about it. We opened at 18.5, 20-point favorites. I don't know, maybe someone or one of the listeners can say, I mean, is this – I couldn't think of a bigger one. Are the biggest spread FAU's ever been favored by in Conference USA against a Conference USA opponent? I couldn't think of a bigger spread. So maybe someone can
– I'm having trouble coming up with double digit spreads.
I think we've been favored. Well, we were favored by double digits last week against FIU. And I think the 2017, we might've been double digit favorites or just under Old Dominion. We were double digit favorites. I think that was like 14.5. I remember betting
that.
I don't think it was that high because I remember looking at that number thinking, oh, wow. What I don't like is coming off a bye, traveling all the way out west, and, against a team that's not great, that it has kind of college football sleepwalk.
Yeah.
Or maybe they come out a little slow and UTSA stays in the game for a half. And, they're not great. All their wins are against Old Dominion, UTEP, Rice, kind of the bottom feeder. They're just the better of the bottom feeders in the conference. But it's in the Alamo Dome. And they have improved a little bit throughout the year. So it's just a game. You don't want to go into halftime within a score and let them think they can stay in this. And now you're in a tricky spot on the road. It happens in college football all the time.
And then, they are fairly talented as well, and that could just be the game where things click, and something happens. There's a bad call. Chris has two bad turnovers. One of them's a pick six or something like that. It's that line scares me, and I learned to never feel confident about an FAU win. A long time ago when we played North Texas at Lockhart when they were starting their third string wide receiver at quarterback that was the coach's son. I remember talking to one of my friends in the band saying, I've never felt more confident that we're going to win a game. And then we lost that game. So I learned to really never be all that confident. But history is any indication, we've only played UTSA once. Back in 2014, I believe, and it was a really, really exciting game, as many Charlie Partridge games were, although we ended up on the losing end on a lot of those. But this was one of the one of those games that was super exciting. I feel like Nate Terry had a touchdown reception. It was like his one of two of his career touchdown receptions. And FAU almost gave the game away. And, so if history is any indication, this would be an exciting game. And we've only played one. Also, it's interesting for those that are maybe new to UTSA or even somewhat new to FAU, there is a lot of, you know, there is a lot of comparisons between FAU and UTSA. You know, they started their program with a former University of Miami head coach who won a national championship, who really wore a headset for a national championship. I don't know how much he coached that 2001 team, but Larry Coker was the, you know, kind of founding father of UTSA. And I remember them, Larry Coker, like there was an article written or something like that about them coming to visit FAU and kind of seeing what it was like to start a program in a, you know, relatively large metropolitan area in San Antonio, excuse me. So I don't know. There's certainly, do you guys have any other thoughts on the game before we go?
Yeah, I just want to see, I'm curious to see, because I think we're going to need to lean on it the next couple weeks, is where our run game goes. So the O-line has been progressively getting better. Let's see what, I think this might be the healthiest he might be at running back. I don't know Larry McCammon's status. You know, we'll see if BJ Emmons plays. This was maybe Lane kind of talked about after the bye week. So it could, our running game could just be quickly the strong point. And I would like to see, outside of Harrison Bryant, who, congratulations, Mackey Awards, semifinalists, final eight. Hopefully they let some G5 representatives in that. But I want to see some more out of the receiving core, not named D'Angelo Antoine this week. I think we got it. Mitchell needs to see some balls down the field. He's been kind of quiet the last few weeks. Pico's provided a little bit, but again, we need to see those guys kind of come back.
Yeah, and on the flip side, I'm curious to see how our defense is going to do against an UTSA passing attack that has recently just found itself. We were talking about this. We had this discussion in the UTSA game thread on the Owl's Nest, and go ahead and check out the discussion and please join it, because UTSA's backup quarterback, Luel Narcisse, I think I'm saying that correctly, took over for Frank Harris, a local San Antonio product who started the season as the starting quarterback. And he started last year, Narcisse, and he really struggled. He played so-so when he took over the reins, I think against North Texas, but then had a pretty solid coming out party, throwing for over 300 yards, about 350 yards, if I remember correctly, last week in their win. So we've had an issue when it comes to defending the deep ball. I hope it's going to be fixed. I'm not saying it's going to be a hostile environment, but the fans at the Alamo Dome are going to be desperate for a win. God knows the last time they had a win against a conference opponent that's over 500. It's got to be back to last year. I'm not sure. And there's a lot of talk about Frank Wilson maybe coaching his last year, being on the hot seat. So, you know, he's going to be playing for his job, basically. So I think it's a dangerous game. Fact of the matter is, I don't think we're going to cover, guys. I forgot who mentioned it earlier, but God forbid it is a game in the fourth quarter. I wouldn't be surprised, because UTSA has stayed in a lot of games. The only game they've really been blown out by this year was the Texas A&M game a couple weeks ago, but at least they're up early. I think they're up 7-0 on the first few minutes of the game. So we know that they can compete. We just got to hope that we don't buckle under pressure of, you know, trying to play a perfect game, especially with Marshall probably blowing out Charlotte, unfortunately.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye out for that one. And a game that I'm actually going to, I'm sure if you're a South Florida person, you can probably still get tickets. Southwest flies direct to San Antonio. But yeah, I'm looking forward to, this will be my second game in a dome, first with the New Orleans Bowl. I'm looking forward to that. I think we'll kind of finish up tonight with cranking up the Lane Kiffin rumor mill. Arkansas is the latest suitor for Lane. Apparently, I honestly, I don't have much thoughts on this. I mean, all indications, Lane, you know, continuously put out on Twitter that he's, He told the Dolphins to draft Tua, even though he's injured, so that he could hang out with him and go watch the Dolphins. You know, obviously he can't hang out with Tua if he's in Arkansas or some other place. So I don't really have much thoughts outside of that. But again, I mean, as the coaching carousel continued, you can kind of continue to hear, oh, Lane Kiffin with this and Lane Kiffin for that. So,
yeah. Does Arkansas even have an airport? Like,
it does. And I just want to, we can make the joke all we want, and no one's saying he's going to take this job, but FAU fans, stop convincing yourself that Boca is the only thing keeping, you know, here. Yes, I'm totally with the narrative. We've talked about it before. He's happy. He's not going to go to Bloomington, Indiana. But I also am not of the nature that I think he's going to stay here forever. Okay? If he does, great. I think he's a great football coach. You know, I've had a few coaches tell me before when I've asked them about, you know, areas where they coach, and Lane's a little different situation. He gets a little bit more freedom. But college football coaches work 100-hour weeks. So I talked to a coach on a sideline 3 weeks ago who is a former coach at Boise State, and he said it didn't matter. You work 100 hours a week. So, you know, and I think you guys need to just get the element, and people talk about, oh, Lane's ego and stuff like that. I hope all college football coaches have an ego. You need to have an ego to be a college football coach. I mean, it's a competitive game. And it would be, it's hard for me not to believe that Lane wouldn't want one more shot to kind of compete on that high level. I mean, do you guys agree? I mean, let's be real. I mean, we could talk about boating and the weather and compare it's 71 in Boca to 31 in Arkansas, but you know, Arkansas in the end, as much as they are, and it's difficult as it is to play in the SEC West, top 20 job in the country. Okay. You're in the SEC. I mean, top 20, you couldn't name 20 jobs, but that's it. You're in the SEC West. Your budget's bigger. Your TV money's bigger. You have access to recruits in Louisiana, East Texas, Missouri, St. Louis, Chicago. You recruit all those areas. Top 20 job. Bobby Petrino took them to a Sugar Bowl. Okay. They have Walmart money there. Okay. Let's be real, okay? I mean, they're gonna pay a coach $5 million, which is approximately five times more than he's making here, okay? So, he doesn't even need to sell his house in Boca, okay? No, it doesn't mean I think he's gonna leave, but you know, sometimes it's like.
Yeah, but we're talking about an athletic department that hired Chad Morris away from SMU after going 500. This is an athletic department that is a dumpster fire. I wouldn't say they're top 20. I would say they're top 30, top 35. Yeah. But I feel like he's much more likely to go to Texas A&M when that job opens up in another
two. That job's not going to open up. And let's also be real with Lane. He's still polarizing as good as he's done here. I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, how great of a head coach he is and, you know, how different. A lot of people nationally still see him as the guy that got left on the tarmac. You know, they're not seeing
he's matured. Yeah.
Yeah. And or just with other things here. So he's going to be a polarizing figure. I don't know if one of the absolute blue bloods is going to, unless he has 10 years of winning here, is going to take a chance of an LSU, an Alabama, a Michigan. It's going to have to be kind of like a school, let's say Arkansas, or possibly another one that's going to be opening up soon, which I actually think it will be. South Carolina, even though the AD gave the kiss of death, he's safe talk, where they have to be like, okay, we're kind of that second tier. We need to take a chance to do something. Okay. Arkansas took a chance at Bobby Petrino. Okay. You know, in a way, you know, South Carolina took a chance with an aging Steve Spurrier who kind of faded away and struggled his last few years at Florida. So I'm not just saying it, just like, and again, let's also not forget how Lane ended up here. You know, Lane was all set for the Houston job. Do you guys remember that? And then we got him down here, and I think he said before that he wasn't even expecting, you know, FAU, and he just got in front of it and they kind of blew him away, and President Kelly and
Yeah.
He was like, okay, you know, like we sold him. So it's like that thing in life. You sit here and say, I'm not going to leave my job. I'm happy here. I'm happy here until you take one interview and you get prevented from an opportunity. You get presented with an opportunity and it's like, man, you know,
I definitely see, you know, the competitive edge, you know, he's still, you know, he's really laid back, but I think he's a very successful coach because he is very competitive. And yeah, I think it may come to that point where he's like, you know what, I've done well here. And I think there's an opportunity, an opportunity for me to get back into kind of the big leagues, so to speak. And who knows, that could be this year. And he may have a plan in his mind where, like, you know what, I want two more years of being able to wear board shorts, you know, to coaches shows and stuff like that. And then I'm going to put my name in, you know, he may have, you know, something like that. So I certainly don't doubt his desire to move up to the next level for sure.
I don't think he has a plan per se where I'm at two more years. I think he's just and I'm just guessing, he's the type of guy to be like, I'm happy here, but he's not.
I'm anxious to leave, essentially. Yeah, like,
I think if the right opportunity presents itself, you never know.
I like South Carolina for him. Virginia Tech, once they sack Fuente, could be.
They're not going to fire him.
Really?
I don't think so. Won enough this year.
We'll see. That didn't they beat Wake not too long ago, which was a decent win for them.
I don't think Fuente, I think, has at least one more year.
And then the Arizona schools, when U of A got rid of you guys have to remind me who was their former coach, real quick.
Rich Rodriguez.
Rich Rod. How can I forget about Rich Rod? I thought. Yeah. When that job opened up, I remember thinking, holy smokes, Lane is gone. He's going back to the West Coast where he's from originally. I think that's like that middle ground that we were talking about, guys, like a South Carolina, not a blue blood, where they're going to be able to have some money to splash, but also have some high expectations, be able to compete on a national level.
Lane said, though, in an Athletic article, Chris Vaney, that if he were to leave, and he was being honest, it would have to be somewhere he can compete for championships. As much as you don't think – they can. Any team in the SEC West can compete for championships.
Yeah, I mean, all you got to do is beat Alabama. Easy as that, you know. Easy.
think of Arizona. I mean, the only team that's kind of consistently out of the Pac-10 would be Oregon. So you beat Oregon. And
yeah, well, Utah looks good this year with the former FAU quarterback, by the way.
Right, yeah.
Washington has fallen off. Stanford has fallen off. But, you know, it won't take long for them to compete. UCLA is a dumpster fire, but USC is pretty solid. But you'd expect UCLA to bounce back eventually. But you're right, because it's not like we're the SEC where you know you're going to have to face 5-10-win teams. You know only one or two teams in the Pac-12 over there is going to be competing. And if you beat one, you're good to go. So only Lane knows what's going to happen, by the way.
And just to wrap on this, it's FAU's goal to become big for their coach, their program to be bigger than their coach. Okay? Be App State. App State just lost a coach. They're 9-1, top 25. Their program's a well-oiled machine. Good coaches know they can go there and win ball games. Let's get to that point.
Yeah, so I guess that will kind of wrap it for us. On our end tonight, we have Hobby from birdsup.com coming up for you guys next. And so that'll kind of do it for us. So please enjoy our interview with Hobby from birdsup.com. All right. And tonight we have another guest for you guys. As you know, we try to bring someone on from the opponent's beat or fan sites. And tonight we have Hobby from birdsup.com. Hobby, thanks for being on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we'll kind of dig into it. This is normally my first question for all the guests is, for FAU fans that haven't been following UTSA as closely this year, you know, we know there's been, you know, been some injuries certainly to starting quarterback, but can you give us a little summation of how this year has gone for UTSA?
Yeah, so kind of like you mentioned, there's kind of some injuries to take note of. You know, started out well with the win against in-city rival UIW and the FCS squad here. Things look pretty good. You know, they played Baylor, which, you know, it looked like they were going to be a top 15 team, and it turned out they were. A loss against Army. So, you know, expected. The season was never supposed to be they were never projected to win, you know, 8-9 games or anything like that. I think 6 was probably the ceiling if you were to give it one. But I think, you know, your normal rational fan could probably tell you it's something between the 4-6 range is what they expected. And that's kind of what's happened. They've got the way they've gone there, though, it's, you know, kind of shaky that they lost their starting quarterback, Frank Harris, during the UNT game. You know, he started out pretty well. He's kind of like, you know, everybody kind of looked to him to be the star of the team and kind of the next guy to take over. He got injured. So, you know, after that, it was just kind of an adjustment period. And now we're with the quarterback today, which is Lowell Narcisse, which, you know, it's taken a couple of weeks for him to get going. But, yeah, you know, I think you can kind of see what Frank Wilson saw in him when he was in LSU. So, yeah, it's, you know, it started kind of rocky. But, I mean, ultimately, I think things have kind of gone how you would expect, is just how they've gone there.
Javi, I have a kind of a question going to the beginning of UTSA football. You know, obviously, I think there's a lot of similarities between the two schools, you know, both in big football states, metro area. It seems, though, that San Antonio, from the beginning, really just jumped on board with this football team. They were pretty much, you guys were close to selling out the Alamo Dome all the time, over 30,000 in fans, the great fan support. And that's obviously kind of waned in the last few years, obviously, without the winning, which was surprising just a little bit because, you know, football being such a big Texas state, you'd figure so many Texas and Texas A&M and, you know, Texas Tech fans. What was it about, you know, the Roadrunners that kind of just caught the attention and had a huge fan base right from the beginning?
Yeah, so, I mean, San Antonio is one of the largest cities in the country, right? I believe it's a 7th or somewhere around there. And the only professional team that there is the Spurs, which obviously, you know, known for winning championships and whatnot. But what there's never been in the city is a football team, college or professional at the highest level, right? So when UTSA came around, the city and the school really came together and kind of sold the, you know, your town, your team kind of thing. Really got the city behind the only Division I program in the city. I believe they had 56,000 for the first game ever, which was, I was actually there. It was pretty impressive, honestly. I mean, we didn't know what to expect, and it was you know, pretty wild at the time. And of course, I mean, you couldn't sustain that, right? So they've kind of you know, fluttered there between in the 20s to 30s, you know, depending on who the opponent is. Bigger teams are willing to come to the Alamo Dome and play UTSA. That's what you've seen Arizona State, Arizona, Baylor, Oklahoma State, all of them play in the Alamo Dome. Again, because it's an attractive venue, you know, the Alamo Dome, and it's also a pretty good recruiting tool. They can come down to the city and recruit those higher level athletes that the city might have. So, yeah, that's kind of how it's gone. You know, lately, you know, hasn't been so hot, but that's just due to the performance on the team and what's transpired these past couple of years.
And, you know, kind of speaking with the performance of the team, and I know this seems like the hot button issue there, is Frank Wilson on his last couple games, or is that still kind of in the air?
I mean, I think he's safe. Especially after
really?
He won that ODU game. Just strictly talking about money, right? Because, you know, I could see a scenario when in these last few games, if things really bottom out, you know, it was a 20-point loss to Southern Miss, but again, they were competitive that first half, right? So, depending on how these two games go, you could see maybe some movement. I know there's a lot of speculation, but there's a lot of, you know, winning is ultimately right what these coaches are graded on, but. Frank Wilson has brought UTSA to the modern college age, if you will, from the Larry Coker days. He's recruiting still at a high level, even with the losses. They're about to break ground in their first football facility here in the next few months. You know, so obviously everything else seems to be going right for him except for the most important thing, which is winning. So, you know, as long as he shows something these last few weeks, I think he'll return. But of course, there's always a possibility where the AD can just, you know, cut ties and start all over.
Avi, then can you explain why it seems like on Twitter a lot of fans, a lot of UTSA fans are ready for Frank Wilson to go? I saw the tweet where the football team is talking about switching up the helmets, bringing back the rowdy head. And almost every single reply wasn't about, yes, bring it back. It was, great, you're doing this now, fire Frank Wilson. You think it's just strictly because of the wins and losses, or do you think there's anything else to add to it?
I mean, there's for sure. I mean, that's one of the dumbest things people get mad about on Twitter, if you ask me. But, yeah, so there's a little bit of frustration there because Frank Wilson seems to be, you know, with his SEC mindset, wanting UTSA to be very, very black and white in terms of what their brand identity is. So he's stuck with the Texas UTSA logo brand. And, you know, so people see these fancy helmets and uniforms. I mean, especially like someone like FAU, which they're awesome uniform combos and helmets. And UTSA kind of just sticks with the same old, right? And so you have a team that's performing poorly these last two seasons, and then you have nothing exciting for the players or the fans. So you can kind of see how that's a little frustrating for any fan, really, to kind of, you know, at least give me something that I can get excited about. And now they're saying, well, it's the last game of the season, right? And now you're doing it? So, you know what I mean? So it's kind of frustrating for the fans when they see, I don't want to say a stunt, but, you know, something like that, kind of please the crowd when it's kind of late, especially when, you know, you're probably going to get, you know, beat this week.
Well, you're talking about exciting, getting the fans excited. The fans seemed really excited to start the year when local kid Frank Harris was announced as QB1. You talked about the injuries a little bit. What exactly happened to him? Why is he no longer playing? That's the injury.
Yeah. So during the Army game, I believe he got his arm pulled by one of the Army defenders and something happened there. He went out for a couple plays, but he came back right back in. So, you know, nobody thought much of it. But the first, I believe, honestly, the first drive of the UNT game, it was a designed QB run, which, I mean, would be pretty ill-advised if you ask me. He ran straight into the defensive line and with the shoulder. And, you know, something happened there. And after that, he was out. And he's been out. He had surgery, I believe. I mean, for sure he had surgery. And he's been ruled out. We haven't been given a timeline. I'm being optimistic when I say he'll be back in the spring, but there's not a for sure thing that he'll be back in the spring.
Outside of injuries, I mean, I guess kind of talk a little about some of the things that have gone right for UTSA. You know, you kind of mentioned that six wins was the expectation. They've got four wins now. Most likely not going to get to, you know, bowl eligibility, even if they happen to beat FAU this weekend. You've got La Tech the next weekend. But what is something that FAU fans, you know, could potentially scare some FAU fans as far as, you know, playmakers or, you know, possibilities?
Yeah, so, I mean, especially on the offensive side of the ball, you know, that's something that obviously if you follow any of UTSA Twitter, it's always been harped on, right? The offense or lack thereof, really. But there's actually some positive signs this year, finally, I guess, if you're a UTSA fan. Lowell Narcisse, for example, he threw for 300 yards, two touchdowns last week. He's a sophomore. True freshman Brayden Brady is right around 800 yards and eight touchdowns. He's probably going to get consideration for freshman in the year, maybe even first team All-Conference USA as a true freshman. So that's pretty positive. His backup is actually a sophomore as well, both from San Antonio, which is pretty cool. You know, and you have a wide receiver, Sakari Franklin, which he's almost gone back-to-back 100-yard games, which is, I honestly cannot tell you the last time a UTSA receiver had 100-yard games almost back-to-back games. I was trying to find it, and I couldn't, honestly. And also a true freshman, another true freshman receiver, caught like a 70-yard pass. So things like that, you know, it definitely gives you optimism for the future. But, you know, it's kind of hard, you know, like those are the things, if you're an FAU fan, you want to look for those young guys that are kind of starting to break out now that they're not really freshmen anymore at this point. They're more, you know, sophomores, if you will, after getting a few snaps in them. So, yeah, on the defensive side, there are some big question marks at linebacker, in the secondary. So, you know, it's a young team. They have freshmen starting all over the field, and you kind of see it, you know, it's very boom or bust right now.
Would you say, you know, that's kind of my follow-up, would you say that's kind of the weakness of the team right now? It seems like they're playing in a lot of tight games with sometimes lesser competition, but if what is kind of the part of UTSA right now that FAU will just be able to attack either offensively or defensively that, you know, concerns you every week?
Honestly, I would say the defense. You know, the linebacking core has been pretty disappointing. They lost Josiah Taiuefa to the NFL last year. You know, he was a big part of their defense. But just honestly, the defense has been giving up some really big plays right now. Unfortunately for them, as the offense has, you can say, progressed, the defense has regressed. So it's definitely something FAU is going to be able to take advantage of. The defensive line does some good things with guys like Jalen Haynes. He's been playing exceptionally well at defensive tackle. And they get the occasional pass rush from the three or four guys they rotate in there. The secondary is good, but they're not the fastest in the world. So, you know, Southern Miss was able to break a couple, you know, quick slants into big plays. So stuff like that is something that FAU is going to be able to take advantage of.
I feel like that falls right into FAU's favor, especially with how they use the jet sweeps, bubble screens, using their slot man like D'Angelo Antoine. Now that Willie Wright is found his footing again his junior year, utilizing their speed against slower defensive backs is where FAU has been able to just put games away. And we've seen that for a while now. I do think it's interesting that we're probably going to see the two best tight ends in the entire conference. I'm a big, big fan of Carlos Strickland the second. From one offense that utilizes tight ends as good as anyone in the nation, talking about FAU there, how big has Strickland been for UTSA this year?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue he's been the biggest offensive weapon they've had, honestly. You know, he's listed as a tight end. He was a wide receiver when he came, when he got to campus, was asked to do a little of tight end work, has bulked up a little bit. So you'll see him lined up at tight end. You also see him lined up in the slot. So they use him both ways, depending on what packages they're using or how they you know, see the field and what the defense gives them. But he's been a great weapon. You know, started out, I believe, in Cal, transferred to Kansas State, and then he was actually a student at UTSA last year. He wasn't even on the football team, and then he just went up to one of the to the coaching staff and asked if he could essentially walk on, and he did. And he made, and obviously, when a four-star guy walks on, you know, you kind of say yes. So, you know, it's worked out really well for UTSA. He got a waiver, so he's going to be a junior this year, so he'll come back next year as well. So that's, again, another bright spot for UTSA if you can give him in.
Good stuff.
Well, I think that's all the questions that we have for you. If for our fans that want to learn a little bit more about UTSA coming up this week and maybe, you know, continue following on, it kind of is remarkable the comparisons for FAU and UTSA, you know, even that helmet thing. I was thinking, you know, back in when we still had Schnellenberger, who was very, very kind of by the book. Our home uniforms were blue tops, white jerseys with white helmets, and you know, we saw all these cool helmets and stuff like that, and we're thinking it's you know, we're just stuck with a 1-11 team in boring uniforms, but. So if people want to find out a little bit more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'll be on Twitter at Rivals Javi. Also, if you want to follow their site account, it's going to be UTSA Rivals, and you know, birdsup.com, like you guys mentioned. Well, that's where you can find all your UTSA news and notes.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you being on with us. And Jack has one more question for you.
No, because, Javi, real quick, sorry. You mentioned Twitter, and I just want to stir the pot in Twitter real quick. who do you think UTSA's biggest rival is? Do you think it's Texas State, UTEP, North Texas? I'm just curious about what you think and what the rest of the UTSA fans think.
I mean, I think you have to say UNT just because of the conference relationship. I think if Texas State was in the conference, it would definitely be them just because of the history they've had, you know, when they were back in the top one. But I would say right now is definitely UNT, especially because Texas State has never beaten UTSA in football. So that's, you know, something people can hold over their head. So I would definitely say UNT.
All right. We all find UNT fans annoying. There you go. That's that.
Glad we can come in an agreement on that.
Yeah, they're still bitter with how we put up like 50 on them when we won the conference championship game twice.
Oh, that's right. I remember. Yeah, I remember that. That was a big thing for them.
Yeah, big for us too.
All right. Well, again, we really appreciate you being on with us, and thanks for joining us, and we're looking forward to this Saturday's game.
No, thanks for having me, guys.
All right. So we thank Javi for being on with us, and make sure you check out. Make sure you check out the game this weekend, and we have a special shout out from Jack before we wrap.
Yeah. I mean, it's the best time of year if you ask me, guys, because you have football overlapping with basketball right now. We got a lot of really fun stuff planned on the Owl's Nest with basketball. Game is happening Wednesday night at Florida Gulf Coast. They haven't won a game yet, but these games between FAU and FGCU are always really interesting. We'll see how that goes. We're at 500 right now. Still looking for the first win over a D1 team. I think it's going to happen against Florida Gulf Coast. I really hope this doesn't come bite me in the butt. But the team's exciting. We don't really know who the alpha dog is yet with this team, with Jalen Ingram just coming back from his torn ACL. We'll see what happens, but at least it's a very exciting time to be following FAU Hoop. So make sure you guys are checking out what's going on in the Alps this week.
Yeah, and with that, we will talk to you next week when we break down the UTSA game from this weekend. Thanks, as always, and go on.